Let us pray. Dear God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Since I preach but once a month, I am afforded the luxury, or I might say the curse, of being able to chew on a particular text for several weeks. Sometimes this is helpful, but honestly, most of the time, it serves only to confuse me and cause me to wander down far too many tangential trails of obfuscation. The passages assigned for this morning proved more perplexing than clarifying. They are both compelling. The first about Sabbath and how we observe or don't observe it, and the second about the power and grace of Jesus bestowed upon mere mortals made of fragile clay. In preparation, I began reading again Donna Skopper's book, Sabbath Sense. When it was given to me years ago, I set it high on my bookshelf so I wouldn't have to look at it. The last thing I needed as a senior pastor of a vibrant church was someone telling me to keep the Sabbath holy, preaching to me about not working on Sunday and instead being reverent and calm and still, when Sunday for me, as I'm sure it is for many of you, means work and laundry and picking up and cleaning and preparing for the week ahead. So I didn't read it. Didn't even crack the first page of what I presume to be a holier-than-thou treatise. But I did pick it up finally, and I had the same reaction that I did this week. I couldn't put it down. The first sentence hooked me. Sabbath is a state of mind, not a day of the week. Skopper says that Sabbath sense is an antidote to our work-driven culture and the anxieties, particularly, of two-career families. It offers a way to take back our time and take back our souls one moment at a time. The focus is on spiritual pauses, not on religious designated days. The sense of Sabbath lies in the moment, any moment that actively includes or invites God's Spirit. As I understand it, what Skopper suggests is that Sabbath sense refers to the pauses around our busy days or within our busy days. The word Sabbath does come from the word to separate, as when scholars take sabbatical leave. So Sabbath is the pause for spiritual leisure, for spiritual food, for play, for rejuvenation, all of which are so desperately needed in our time-starved world. From not having enough time, enough money, enough energy, enough joy, Sabbath sense invites us to enter into the neighborhood of enough and abundance. Here, in these pauses, we are encouraged to simply be, not to do, just to be human beings, not human doings. Skopper says, Sabbath sense steals back time from the chaos of a hectic world. It is the triumphal victory over being rather than doing. And when we consciously allow ourselves to be in the present, in the moment at hand, we are apt to see the blessedness of our lives. It really doesn't matter where that moment is. You could be folding laundry or painting a picture or doing the dishes or reading the paper or listening to someone or staring off into space. What does matter is that you separate that time from what has been and what is coming. We're all so busy, aren't we? And we have so many demands that we're forever multitasking. Someone told me this past week that he had tried in vain to do three things at once: listen to the news on the radio, read a book, and drink a beer. He said the beer went down fine, But he doesn't remember the book or any of the news. Scopper says the capacity to be happy is pretty much lost in the modern world. Most of us like the page we're on quite well. It's just that we're also looking at the next page, to something better. The next obligation invades the current obligation. We would really enjoy our son's soccer match if it weren't for the groceries that we're going to have to pick up later. This invasion of now by later are insidious, a form of enslavement, she suggests. So the hunt for a better house, a better car, a better stereo, it's a kind of lust, and it's lethal. One way I think this plays out that is especially poisoning is in the way we listen to one another. How often do we really take the time to listen carefully to what someone is saying? So focused are we on what's coming that we half listen and half plan what we will say when it's our turn to talk. And we jump in and we finish each other's sentences, or we put words in our friend's mouth and then agree with what they've said or not had a chance to say. Listening carefully and patiently is a great gift to the one speaking, but allowing ourselves the luxury of being completely present to someone else is a gift as well. So how do we find Sabbath in our days? You will all go about it differently and find those times that feed you. I just started noticing little things differently this week, taking time to recognize the grace around me, and pretty soon I just felt flooded with Sabbath moments, which I came to see as grace notes, those moments when the ordinary seems enriched and infused with the Spirit. A bouquet of lilacs is a Sabbath, a grace note. Nesting bluebirds, grace at meals. Nighttime rituals with children, meditating, praying, walking, lighted candles, different plates at dinner, the adoring, trusting gaze of a dog. Spring cleaning can be a Sabbath endeavor if it's done lovingly, loving the houses that are our homes, saying thank you for the shelter and the patience and the forgiveness, maybe just one closet or cupboard at a time. But we have also, don't we, emotional clutter, undigested experiences that we have stacked in piles and not dealt with. We don't need to solve them, but we do need to recognize them and articulate how they make us feel. Maybe you just say out loud to yourself or someone else, "I am having a really bad day here." That acknowledgement of how it is for you is an invitation to God. Being with the unfinished, the broken parts of you can be discouraging, but being with them with God is grace. This is what Paul, I think, is talking about when he says that we have treasures in clay pots. The gifts from God that are daily laid at our feet and planted in our hearts are just that, gifts from God. Paul emphasizes the fragility, our own fragility, by using the image of a clay pot, a breakable, perhaps chipped, lovely container that carries God's grace and love and pours it forth to feed and water the parched upon the earth. What Paul is cautioning against, of course, is pride and the misguided notion that we are inherently ourselves powerful and indestructible, that our talents and treasures are results of our own capacities and cleverness, that the power and majesty come from us and not from God. I came across a story recently that I'd like to share with you. A water bearer in India had two large pots, each hanging at the end of a pole which he carried across his neck, a yoke of sorts. One of the pots had a crack in it, And while the other pot was perfect and always delivered a full portion of water at the end of the long walk from the stream to the master's house, the cracked pot arrived only half full. For 2 years, this was the daily routine, with the bearer delivering only 1.5 pots full of water to his master's house. Of course, the perfect pot was proud of its accomplishments, as full of pride as of water. But the cracked pot was ashamed of its imperfection and disheartened that it was able to deliver only half of what it had been made to do. So after 2 years of what it perceived as a bitter failure, the cracked pot finally spoke to the water bearer one day by the stream. "I am ashamed of myself, and I need to apologize to you." "Why?" said the bearer. "What are you ashamed of?" "I've been able for these past 2 years to deliver only half of my load because this crack in my side causes water to leak out all the way back to the master's house. And because of my flaws, you have to do all this work and you don't get full value for your efforts," the pot said. And the water bearer felt sorry for the old cracked pot and said, "As we return to the master's house, I want you to notice the beautiful flowers along the path." As they went up the hill, the old cracked pot did indeed notice the sun warming beautiful flowers by the side of the road, and this cheered it some. But at the end of the trail, it still felt bad because it had leaked out half its load, and so again, it apologized. The bearer said to the pot, "Did you notice that there were flowers only on your side of the path, but not on the other pot's side? That's because I have known about your flaw, and I took advantage of it. I planted flower seeds on your side of the path, and every day while we walk back from the stream, you've watered them. For 2 years, I've picked these beautiful flowers to decorate the master's table. Without your being just the way you are, he would not have had these flowers to grace his house." This past Wednesday, which incidentally is the day of the week I try to observe as Sabbath, I went to Montpelier to attend a pop-up rally on the Statehouse lawn organized by kids to thank Governor Scott and the legislators who had worked so valiantly this session to enact stricter gun control laws. 1,350 white flags were placed on the lawn in honor of all the children who were killed or wounded this past year as a result of gun violence. Having been to many such rallies in the past, I anticipated a large crowd of placard-waving enthusiasts. But when I got there, I wondered if it had been canceled, because aside from three high school girls, there were only 8 of us. The adults present, some from Gun Sense Vermont or other gun control lobbying groups, and a couple, 2 legislators, were quick to point out under their breath that they hadn't organized this event. They'd left it to the kids. The implication was, of course, that the poor showing wasn't their fault. The young women spoke briefly and then we dispersed, and I must admit it seemed like a bit of a bust. The day certainly didn't ring of Sabbath to me, and I think I might have thought selfishly that it had been a waste of my time. No great sermon illustrations had presented themselves, and the cause for gun control had not significantly advanced. Having stopped briefly in Burlington on my way home, I weaved my way south the way many of us do at rush hour, through parking lots and back roads just west of Route 7. It was heading towards the old Kmart parking lot, that strikingly desolate expanse of pavement, that I came upon a man pushing a shopping cart. What struck me about him at first was his beard, which gracious went out at right angles from his face about 8 inches on either side. As I was wondering if that was hot or cool in the summer, he stumbled and his cart fell over. Pulling in beside him, I went to help. He was trying to get up, but he seemed more intent on saving the possessions in the cart. There weren't many, but I could see that something in a brown paper bag was leaking. By the wafting smell, it was easy to know that it was alcohol of some kind. I righted the cart and asked if I could help him, watching as he fished in the bag for the broken bottle of Early Times, held it up, and issued a gruff expletive. "Well, that's that," he said, and he sat down. And I, too, took to the pavement in the hot sun and evaporating whiskey, and we talked for half an hour. His story, as you might imagine, was one of scarcity, not enough, of loss and loneliness. I resisted moving into my fix-it mode of giving him a Hannaford's card, telling him about services available, offering to drive him somewhere. I just listened as he told me about the Vietnam War, his daughter who wouldn't talk to him and thinks him, he really said this, a crackpot, the pain in his gut, the dog who died last winter. And when we parted, I gave him $20, something that we're all told not to do because it will go to drink or cigarettes. But who am I wondered, to be judging? Better to give him a sense of independence and trust. I went to my car. I opened the door and I turned to wave goodbye, and he lifted his hand and he said, "God bless you." And I drove off that hot summer afternoon, having had a genuine Sabbath moment with a man whose jar was cracked and leaking not water, but whiskey, but also vulnerability, need, and a genuine invitation to compassion. So we come to this table, to this communion table, to partake of the gift of Jesus's vulnerability, Jesus's clay jar that was emptied out for all of us, Jesus's invitation to remember that it is through his and our own brokenness that we are healed and made one, that we are invited to sit by the side of the road and listen and bless one another. And after communion, we'll move into our special congregational meeting and we'll talk about potentially buying an organ, but what we will really be talking about is the importance of our Sabbaths here in this large jar of clay, this sanctuary. We won't get it entirely right. How would we know if we did? We will do our best to care for this splendid jar of clay, this vessel that invites and contains the Spirit and the power of God and the shards of so many faithful souls. But we may make mistakes and chip it here and there, as others have in the past. We won't please everyone, and some may feel driven to the bottle and others to the door, while still others will rejoice. It is for us, crackpots all, to leak out upon this community the waters of redemption, the cup of blessing, the love of God. Grace and peace.